Grace, greetings, and welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast for the 29th of August. I'm Paul White. Tomorrow, the 30th, is Friday. We will not do long form Friday. We're going to just stay with our 1 Corinthians study today and tomorrow. And then on Saturday, the 31st, we will have the August essay edition. I do that out of sort of a self-discipline. I just tell myself you need to keep your writing sharp and your thinking skills sharp, and so I make myself do that every month. And I have a topic for this month that I've been mulling over for some time, so looking forward to posting that on the 31st. And then, of course, the first day of September happens this weekend, and we will be airing for you on all of our platforms. I like to try to get you up to speed on that Sunday stuff. Sunday, September the 1st, we will be presenting you with a sermon we presented to our online group in Wichita, Kansas. I meet with them once a month. We record that session. This sermon was titled, Heirs Together of the Grace of Life. It deals with Peter's instruction to husbands and wives in 1 Peter 3. We do some context work out of Peter's epistle, and we talk a lot about what that phrase means. The question there revolves around that phrase in 1 Peter 3:7, that your prayers can be hindered. And so we dig into that. It's a sermon I'm pretty excited to air for you because there's insight in it that I think will be of benefit, not just for marriages, but for the way we treat grace and our own identity and the value that we have. So that's this Sunday on PaulWhiteMinistries.com, on our YouTube page, which, by the way, is PWM. Go to YouTube, search PWM, and subscribe. And then all of our audio platforms, Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, that will be available. I was in the book of Exodus in my personal study time recently. I'm working very slowly through Genesis, Exodus, and I wrestle. I get in there and read a little bit, and I might stay on one spot for days and just think it over and work it over, and sermons come out of that, and ideas come out of that. And I was in that 19th chapter of Exodus where Moses is at Sinai, and I've done some work on this even in recent sermons, but I think it popped for me because we've been in 1 Corinthians 7. And in the 7th chapter of 1 Corinthians, Paul is dealing with these sexual issues. Of course, he deals with single people in the Corinthian church and how they should view sexuality. Paul says some real context, time-bound stuff about not getting married. Then he turns his attention to the married folk, and we've spent some time on this with you over the last few days on the podcast. And it got me to thinking more and more about sexuality, the psychology of it for believers, because the psychology of sexuality for believers is in some respects, and I know I'm painting with a broad brush here, I'm saying believers as if everyone thinks the same way, and believe me, I know they don't, but in many ways it's very immature. It's as if we don't talk about sexuality. It's just one of those things that exists. It's in marriage, it's the best way to keep it, let's leave it alone. Paul doesn't shy from it, and he deals with it, and he's upfront with it, and he makes a statement that we dealt with in the 7th chapter about husbands and wives not abstaining except for fasting and prayer, which is where they go, and that, by the way, seems to be pretty time-bound. They're facing the end of their age. It seems to be really the only natural form of contraception was abstinence. And there's that first century injunction about woe to her who's pregnant in that day. And so the early church was really paying attention to the signs of the times. And I think that had a lot to do with some of Paul's sexual injunctions in 1 Corinthians 7. You're wondering, what in the world does reading Exodus 19 have to do with that? Well, I was reading Exodus 19. Israel's at Mount Sinai. God is speaking to Moses, and he tells Moses to go down and speak his words to the people, and that they are to go. God tells him, go to the people, consecrate them for 2 days, today and tomorrow, and then let them wash their clothes and let them be ready for a third day. And the third day starts to take on new covenant meaning I think at that point, there's this third day revelation of God, and we get that third day revelation of the new man coming out of the tomb. And so, and God says to him, have them ready for the third day, because on the third day, I'm going to come step foot on Sinai so everybody can see me. And Moses goes down the mountain. Literally, verse 14 of Exodus 19 tells you he went down from the mountain to the people, sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And that should be the end of the story. But the 15th verse happens, and Moses says to the people, be ready for the third day. Do not come near your wives. And when I read that, I'm disturbed at what Moses adds that God didn't say. In God's instructions of the 19th chapter, he doesn't say anything about abstinence from sex between husbands and wives. Because in God's view, it is not unclean for husbands and wives to have sex. In fact, it's clean and holy. It's exactly what's supposed to be happening. But Moses warns them off of sex until that third day. And it's not long after this that Israel decides they don't want to talk to God anymore. You go talk to God for us. We can't do this. It's you speak to him. And in fact, that happens at the end of chapter 20. The people say to him, "What you let God say it to you, you come say it to us. We don't want to talk to him." And I can't help but believe that one of the reasons Israel had a bad perception of the nature of God is because Moses misrepresented God through that act of forced abstinence in Exodus 19. Think about it. Moses is hearing from God. He comes down the mountain. He says, God says, clean up. In 3 days, he's going to meet you. Oh, by the way, don't sleep with your wives, husbands. And it leaves you with this psychology of, there's something dirty about that. There's something less holy about it, something less spiritual that I should abstain from it. Okay, so what does that have to do with 1 Corinthians 7? Well, maybe nothing, but what I saw as I've been focusing on that Corinthians passage is that there was still this idea that there was things to be gained from abstaining from sex. And while Paul's argument seems to be entirely in the natural, I was just struck by the thought that maybe the Exodus 19 encounter between Moses, God, and Israel has a lot to do with how we view things like sex, even within marriage, and that maybe we should reevaluate that. I ask a lot of questions. Hopefully this is one that you will wrestle with on the answer, for the answer as well. Tomorrow, back to 1 Corinthians 7. I'll see you then. God bless.